I get on the closed session by phone. And so, Alex, did he contact you to ask Mac, was that legal?
He did, and that is okay. So when we get close to that closed session, what I committed for Mac and David was to shoot him a text message and let him know when we're about to go on.
All right. Thank you.
Sir.
All righty. Well, it's 7 o'clock. So thank you all for joining us tonight. And Brad's going to open us up with the invocation. Thank you, Brad.
Yeah, you're welcome. Let's pray. Father, thanks for the night. Thank you for the chance to govern our town. Give us wisdom, we pray, a sense of cordialness and a sense of togetherness as we make hard decisions for our community. Thank you for our town, the place we live, the people, and our neighbors. In your name I pray. Amen.
Amen. Amen. All right. Thank you, Aaron. Pledge of Allegiance. All right. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right. Thank y'all. All right. We'll call the meeting to order. And Aaron, do we have anybody that signed up that wants to speak for public comments?
No one has let me know ahead of time, but if there's anyone on the call, please let us know by unmuting your microphone and letting Mayor Dunn know that you'd like to give public comments.
All right. Well, I see TJ Pressler on there, but nobody wants to speak, so we'll move on to the agenda approval. And so we do want to add a closed session. Two things, Alex. Linda wants to give us an update on the her property negotiations. So we need to include that in the closed session as well as what what on the Stinson Farms. So what are those numbers? Do y'all have them handy?
I believe that would be 3 and 5, Mayor. It's 143-318,
11A3, and 11A5. 11A3 and 5. All righty. So we'll make that 5A. And hopefully it'll be around 8:45 there, Alex. We'll just play it by ear and let Mac and David know. Because, we got to sign off and then go to the other link that Aaron sent to us. Any other changes or additions to the agenda? All right, can I get a motion to approve it, please?
I move approval of the agenda tonight with the addition of 5A closed session.
All right. Motion by Brad, second.
Second.
Stephen, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Ayes have it. All righty. All right, first up is the Stinson's Farm Development Agreement. I'll open the public hearing and then the applicant has asked for us to recess it until February 8th, 21.
Mayor, could I add something to that very quickly?
Sure can.
Sure, Alex here, everyone. So the mayor's correct. And the applicant has requested we kind of continue the conversation for this project to February 8th, but also recess and continue the public hearing until February the 22nd. So that's continuing the conversation on February 8th, but recessing and continuing the conversation recessing and continuing the public hearing on February the 22nd.
All right, thank you, Alex.
Yes, sir.
All right, next up is the NCDOT Greenway Crossing Signal Inspection Agreement. So we don't need to pull anything up, I don't think. But Alex, can you give us an update on your conversations with DOT?
Sure, be happy to. And to help everybody, I know everybody's not, some people are visual learners. Is it okay if I pull up a brief PowerPoint?
Sure. Sure.
Okay, great. And as I'm pulling that out, I want to recognize one of our DOT engineers, Travis Pressler, for joining us. Big thank you to Travis for joining us. So I'm going to do a quick run through, and he and I both will be available for for questions after. Background, so real briefly, as you know, we're doing a hard design for the Greenway portion and section over there by Blair Mill Park and Vickery Subdivision. And as part of that, we're required to put in a pedestrian hybrid beacon signal, a Hawk beacon, and DOT requires an agreement to review and inspect. That agreement is typically what the actual cost is. And on January the 6th, the council thought about it and they wanted to get some further information just to get comfortable with it, to see if they wanted to continue. Examples of when DOT has charged municipalities in similar situations, and then the policy allowing DOT to do this. So I wanted to provide the update that DOT has provided several interlocal agreements for similar situations. For example, staff verified that NCDOT took the same approach with the village of Meisenheimer for a greenway crossing there. Same concept where they were charged as a placeholder $6,000 and with the agreement to be reimbursed minus DOT's. And then finally, a written policy that DOT provided. So if council wants to move forward, the recommendation would be to authorize staff to enter into a review and inspection agreement with NCDOT and any related future maintenance agreements with NCDOT just for this particular crossing. So that being said, wanted to be brief and let you know staff are here to answer any questions you might have, and as well as DOT engineer Mr. Travis Pressler.
All right, thank you, Alex. Any questions for Alex or Travis or comments? All right. Well, you know, I was the one that, you know, I'll go ahead and make my comments. I was the one that brought this up. It just seems peculiar to me, Travis, and I know you're the engineer and you're the, will be the messenger back, and I need to talk to, you know, legislative guys and the higher ups, but it just seems odd to me that we're paying taxes, you know, tax money for y'all to work. And then, you know, this is just, should just be in your scope of work. In your day-to-day process as these projects come about, especially due to the fact that you're bound to be less busy due to the number of projects that have been put on hold. I don't know that for a fact, but in any business, when your funds are sales are down, you're not as busy. The operations folks aren't as busy. Sales guys are out busier, but the operations folks. So it just seems odd to me that y'all were charged for this. Secondly, you know, does the city of Charlotte pay this? I'm just curious that as many stoplights as they have, pedestrian crossings and things like that, I was curious, does the city of Charlotte pay this?
This is Travis Pressler with NCDOT. I believe that question is directed to me, but I guess there's a lot there to unpack, but I would say that this is our normal process that we've been following for many, many years. I don't do the signal review, and I'm not part of that group, but I do know that this is a normal process. And we provided an example. I think the example that we provided was, like Alex said, for the town of Meisenheimer, but you know, this would apply to any entity essentially other than the NCDOT that would want to install some kind of traffic signal into the NCDOT right-of-way. And there's a variety of different types of agreements with other towns, and the city of Charlotte, they maintain our signals inside the city of Charlotte. There's a variety of different ways to go about signal maintenance, signal installation, but for this example, it would follow most of the other types of agreements that we would enter into and have entered into with other municipalities across the division and across the state. So I.
All righty. I got it. Thank you, Travis.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions, comments?
We'll get a copy of all this, all the work that's done through this process, correct?
Hey, Mr. Ayers, could you clarify, are you looking for like the design work or?
Well, I mean, I guess what I'm asking to be blunt here is that for $6,000, we're going to get a paper trail of what that $6,000 is paying for, correct?
Yes, sir. And Mr. Pressler can add on to this, but essentially, my understanding, what we would get is there'd be an itemized listing of, you know, X engineer makes this amount per hour, he spent this amount of hours. And so this will be a charge there and there would be an itemized list.
Okay. Thanks, man.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
All right. Any other comments, questions? All right. What's the pleasure of the council?
Mayor, I'll make the motion to approve the NCOT Greenway Cross Signal Inspection Agreement.
Second.
Who was that? The second?
John.
John. All right. Motion by Ms. Paxton, second by Mr. Martin. Any further discussion? All right. Aaron, could you do a roll call, please?
Yes, sir. District 1, Martin.
Aye.
District 2, Scholl. Oh, I'm sorry, he's not in attendance. District 3, Paxton.
Aye.
District 4, Grooms.
Aye.
District 5, Ayers.
Aye.
District 6, Richardson.
Aye.
All righty, that's unanimous. Thank you all. Travis, thank you for attending tonight.
Anytime, thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Travis.
All right, next up is our Economic Development Strategic Plan update. Is Chris, are you on?
Yes, sir, I'm here. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for joining us.
If you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and share the screen with you.
That'd be great.
All right. Can everyone see that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Excellent. Well, again, I appreciate very much the team bringing me in our office to help guide some of this. And again, I really do appreciate the guidance of the council members, Richardson and Scholl, and also the cooperation and great assistance that's been given to me in doing some of these analyses from the staff, from Aaron and Lynn and Marcia to Alex. So thank you to all of them. But Mayor Dunn and council, I do appreciate again this opportunity to present some of this information. Again, this is just an update as we'll be finalizing some things hopefully by the end of February. But wanted to sort of give you an update of where we are. Just some general facts. And again, these things always move. But right now the population is approximately 16,000 people. Excuse me, the acreage around 5,300. Tax rate, as we all know, is 21.5 cents. In doing some of the analysis, we came up to the residential tax base is approximately 83.6% of your entire value of the town. And the commercial tax base is around 16.5. Residential units, again, this is an approximation, around 5,700, 5,800 residential living units. And the commercial units around 365. The average home value, that's a mistype here, it's not price. The average value, at least coming out of the analysis from FY 2020, is approximately $246,787 per home. And again, this is a phenomenal number. And so when you look at just kind of crack open the book and you start to look at Stallings, it really starts to tell a really good story and something that can sell and continue to build on. One of the things, just kind of looking at local economies from sort of a global scale. So this could be applied to New York City, to Marshville, you know, is all local economies thrive as long as they have some sense of balance in their system. And so the textbook, like if you were basically teaching an economic development course, the textbook ratio that you would try to achieve is residential value of about 60% and commercial about 40. I'm a big America's Cup sailing fan. And so I think the sailboat depicts that pretty strongly, that the sail represents the residential and is the driving thing that catches the wind, allows the community to move forward. But it's the industrial and the commercial and retail that makes the keel, that keeps the boat from flipping over. So it's that balance there that is necessary. residential is key. Again, nothing about this presentation is to bash residential. So I want to make sure that that is clear. It is these two things have to have each other. So the residential, that investment is key to us to create that workforce that goes to the retails. It creates that healthy retail development, supports our education network. It provides that culture, that quality of life that is there in the community. But it does come with a cost. Residential demand things. You know, they want parks. They want other stuff. So they have ongoing cost. Residential development is extremely high on a cost to serve basis compared to any other land use. And in some areas, it's higher than others. Again, this is balance, is critical in that planning going forward to make sure that you have enough areas reserved for something other than residential development to help overall create that good, healthy economy so that we don't overburden the residential community with higher tax. And so that's one of the things is without that balance, you can start to see some of the, you know, some or all of these, depending on the community, where the balance can get out of whack, that the taxes will most likely start to increase because you don't have enough of that keel in the water to help support the sale. You have pressures to cut services. So if you don't want to raise taxes, you've got to do something else. And that's the potential of cutting services. People with means have the potential to leave. You know, you can see that probably right now in New York City, where they're sort of out of balance and people are vacating the city in droves. In areas where there are no job opportunities, it's hard to have the children of your residents come back home if they don't have a place to potentially work or at least be close to a place to work. So again, this is just something that could happen, and it could happen in varying degrees. Again, without balance, though, at some point, there's going to have to be some hard decisions made. And we've seen that in communities throughout the U.S. and even in North Carolina, like with places like Cary, where they've had to do some pretty drastic things to help increase their non-residential tax base. So if you look, now let's dial it in, get really specific to Stallings. If you look at FY 2020s, which that ended June 30 of last year, again, the residential tax base, so, and this is averaged up, is 83.6. But if you look at that residential tax base, it generates approximately 84% of, its value represents 84% of all the value within the town. The commercial tax base represents roughly 16%. As we said, the dollars that come off of that, so of that 84%, 78% of the revenue to the town is generated from that 84%. And 22% of the revenue to the town is represented within that commercial tax base, which is only 16. So you can already see what's happening here is the expenses start to show up now. And so the expenses, those things that are necessary to support a healthy residential community, those expenses are higher than what they generate in tax revenue. So 90% of all the expenses in the town, kind of going through the books with Marcia and the team, is right at 90% that the residential tax base consumes. So it generates 78%, but it consumes 90. The commercial tax base only consumes about 10%. So again, this is all normal and is the way it should be. But it also demonstrates why you need to have that commercial tax base. So as a result, in FY 2020, the residential tax base, because it only consumed, or it only generated 78 and consumed 90, you had a net loss of $782,000 last year on that zoning type, land use type. On the commercial and retail industrial, you made $796,000. So that's the way the commercial is supposed to help support and offset some of the losses of residential. If you break it down per unit, basically every house costs the town $135 per year. every industrial, commercial, or retail unit generates roughly $2,100, $2,200 per unit. Again, that's varying much even worse than the houses. That's going to vary dramatically because you're not talking about everything is equal in size. So it's really hard to do it per unit, but that gives you an idea. So the average home value, tax base value, at $246,247,000, again, that is extremely healthy. People would lob off their left arm to have that kind of home value. But if you went with a strategy of no residential or only residential development and no commercial, your current tax rate would have to be adjusted from 21.5 to 37.3 cents to make up the difference. So that's where I was explaining why you have to then move your tax rate if you don't have enough commercial tax base at the bottom to help shore up that economy, local economy. So with the tax rate at 21.5 cents and the houses losing money, you can look at it and see that every home is roughly subsidized on their tax bill, $390. So every citizen benefits from that commercial tax base being there, again, by that $390 that they would have otherwise have to pay. And then when you look at it from a county perspective, it's over $500 for the county. So you're looking at almost, you know, $900 that the residents benefit by having a healthy commercial tax base. If for some reason the town wanted to try to break even at its home value, which is, again, not the point, but it's a good talking point, a good discussion to kind of think about. It would take about, the average home would have to go from 246 to 309. That's about a $60,000 increase, 65 or 55,000. So when looking at that, it's not just, oh, let's put in $300,000 homes. It's the next 1,000 homes built have to average $675,000 just to move that needle. In the county, it's dramatically different. So if you look at the countywide, because you have a blend of homes, the value is a little bit lower. And so in the county level, that when we did this analysis, it was the next 5,000 homes had to average 1.1 million. So to get to a break even. And again, we're not supposed to, and I'm going to keep hitting this point, the residential is not supposed to pay for itself, but it's that balance. So you've got to always go back and getting that commercial base, make sure that you know, pound for pound, acre for acre, the most valuable land in your community is industrial, commercial, retail. So, and for what it provides and what little it consumes. So with that, the directive was to try to start to develop an economic development plan. And so something specific to Stallings. So it's not what Marshfield wants, not what Monroe wants, not what Waxhaw wants. It's what Stallings would fit with Stallings. And one of the unique things with Stallings is the limited land available left to develop. So this is even more critical in making sure that the going forward, that that land is appropriately zoned and the highest and best uses are put on those. That could be residential or it could be commercial or it could be a park. It just, that's your decision to make. And what hopefully this plan will help illuminate and get you to where you want to be. The purpose of the plan is to improve the balance in the tax base and improve that financial strength of the town so that you can retain the low taxes while retaining also that great quality of life that already exists there. Is to enable the town to provide even better services. You know, if you need to add additional fire, if you need to add another park, if you need to add sidewalks in certain areas, whatever that may be, this gives you revenue coming in that's not on the backs of the residents to do that. So to generate the higher taxes, higher sales and use taxes to the town. So again, from electrical use at Berry Plastics and CEM to even sales tax, the stuff that they would buy. So all of that helps. And then create a better sense of place. So that we remain an attractive place to bring your family, not only your family, but also your business. So we looked at this and have some goals put in place. The goals of the plan is hopefully to achieve an 80-20 So move that industrial commercial retail up from that 16% to 20% by 2030. That's going to be challenging because we've got a couple headwinds against us with COVID kind of slowing some of the industrial commercial, as well as encouraging residential growth. And we're also looking at the reval, which is going to provide even a higher value for your homes, which is going to move that, you know, create some delta between the two. We're going to create awareness and recognition of Stallings as a multifaceted community. So it can, you know, from its commercial and industrial centers to its great neighborhoods and greenways and parks and everything else. Make Stallings more of a destination than a pass-through, and then create that traditional downtown. Those would be the, I think, some goals that we've talked about within the committee. Well, you got to get there somehow. And so we have some strategic items to think about. One is to catalog the existing businesses, which we already have a good handle on already through my office. And then there may, depending on the type of business that you want to catalog, we can grow and develop that list. Develop methods in which to demonstrate appreciation to them. Currently, we have a countywide industry appreciation event, but there may be something more specific and local that Stallings would like to do. And encourage their retention. It's that relationship that you work through with that appreciation event and other outreach programs that you want to, you create that ownership that they have in your town. And that helps you, you know, if there's an opportunity to consolidate, that they would choose Stallings over another location. They may have a facility, or if they're going to have to close a facility, that they would choose the other one and not the one located in Stallings. Two is to develop a business attraction strategy that's in alignment with the vision of the town. So you're not going to necessarily look to recruit an asphalt plant. So what would that be? And so we want to develop those strategies. We have some ideas that we have for the county, and some of those would be more in line, I think, with the town's vision, and working with the Economic Development Committee that we can really hone in on that. Develop a product development plan. So start to identify some land for commercial development, and that allows us to work with our landowners, work with developers, find ways to create, again, when we talk about product from an economic development standpoint, that's ready sites, that's buildings, other things available that companies can move to, or retail or office development, where people can come into the town and start working right away. Develop strategic partnerships, again, with the retail development folks. Understand how the dynamics are right now with retail. Obviously, they're changing daily with COVID and other pressures that are on the retail community. And then partner with the private sector to improve that existing retail center. You know, most retail right now that is successful is experiential, if I said that right. So you want to go and have an experience while you're doing that and spending the money. Otherwise, if it's not, then I can just click on Amazon and be done with it. And communicate the town's vision for the town's town center strategic area plan. So we'll put a little bit more meat on these action strategic items with their action steps as we put together the economic development plan, and we'll bring that back for your review. So again, some takeaways. Stallings is in a great place. It's in a, you know, great place geography-wise, great place. I think your tax base is healthy because your home values are so high. You know, if your home value is $160,000, we'd be having a much different discussion. So I think you're in a better off than most places that we would be talking to. You're also, you do need to focus on the remaining land. That's probably the biggest Achilles heel now, is how much land you have left to make a long-term difference in establishing that good balance. And so, as we've said, you know, one of the things I appreciate so much about what you guys do in seeking the office and being elected is you're making decisions now for things that will happen well when you're out of office. And so there's some decisions here that have to be made, and it will benefit people 30, 50 years down the line. So with that, that's a kind of a quick overview. Ready to handle any questions you may have.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Yeah. Any questions, comments?
I've got a few comments, Mayor, but if there are questions, I can hold off for a second on that. Any press?
Go ahead, Brad.
Well, yeah, let me first thank Chris. And it was fun in this process. It is fun in this process. We're not quite done yet to reconnect with him. Many of you knew I did some work similar to Chris's job for the city of Charlotte for a while. A couple points I'd make. Frame of reference. What does long-term mean? It's easy to think about long-term being the 2030 framework that this plan is going to encapsulate. And that's, I would just submit that's not what we mean by long-term. When you see some of those things like out of balance, communities going bankrupt, the pendulum swinging past the point of no return, I think that we ought to at least recognize when we say that, we think as the committee, Stylings 2060 or 2050 or 2090. I know that's hard to get your head around, but the point of a good economic development plan is to really be thinking about really long-term problems that come from not giving enough attention to the things we've outlined, such as business retention, problem solving, identifying land, and in our case, you know, spending some effort, time, money, and energy on a downtown. So I'd start with that point. Long-term is long-term. I asked some of you when the downtown project was going, we asked some of the committee members, who are we building this downtown for? I think the right answer is our children's children. There is no way in my lifetime Stylings downtown will be what as vibrant as it could be or will be when my kids are around with their kids. We can take some steps in the right direction, but that node of really humming commercial walkable development with ice cream, coffee, whatever, it's going to take a long, long time to do. So that's the first comment. The second thing is this stuff isn't hard. You know, my first job at the city in 2000, well, I started there in 99, but my first economic development job in the city, you know what it was? It was driving around Charlotte, particularly Westinghouse Boulevard, in my car and getting paid mileage to knock on doors, set appointments, to go sit down and get as high up as I could in the company. Plant manager, CFO, CEO, sometimes it was the assistant to, and the whole question was, thanks for being here. What do you need to grow and expand? That essentially in a nutshell is what this plan really puts a premium on is building business relationships with CEM. I'd say it's pretty good. Berry Plastics, probably okay. But in addition to those two, and McGee, of course, the 50 other businesses in our community, who are they? What do they need? Union West Business Park, what's the potential? It's going to take $700,000, Chris Easterly tells us, to bring those roads up to standard and own them ourselves and make that a really humming business park. What's the argument for us even considering partnering in that? I mean, Chris's analysis tonight helps us get closer to that logical reason for why would the town put public money into a private business park. I don't think we're doing that, by the way. That's not a recommendation, but it begins to lay the groundwork. And the final thing I'll say is the good news is I don't think we have to do a lot of work on that point number four of three of identifying land, setting it aside. Our small area plans that you guys did long before I joined the board does a pretty good job of showing where that intensification of industrial, commercial, office should be. Idlewild at 485, Office Park, Smith Farm Road, Gribble Road, and the Monroe Bypass area, and downtown. There's not much else you've got in the town. So focusing our efforts and planning in those quadrants are important. So that's enough for me for a moment, and I can take some questions too from my perspective.
Thank you, Brad. Anybody else, comments or questions?
I'll always ask questions, man, if y'all give me an opportunity. Y'all know that.
You're up.
So, Brad, you kind of hit on a key topic, right? Is that, I mean, if we're looking at long-term plan, you know, 30, 50 years out into the future. How does that, from a process point of view, transition into what do we do for the, you know, next 12 months, next 24 months, and actually actionize a 50-year plan, if you will?
Yeah. So my opinion, there's two or three things. Have a staff resource available to be the business problem solver. That sounds simple, but it's someone on our team, staff team, and it's likely part-time. There's likely a portion of someone's job to be that person who proactively, ideally proactively, but at least reactively is point person for that business owner who has an issue with traffic, transportation, a traffic signal not working, road potholes, you name it. Just what are the things? So a resource in our staff that is on point for business relations. The second thing is the downtown. Now, it was the top council priority last February. It probably will continue, I assume. We've got some time and resources devoted to it. But that little four-block area right beside Town Hall, around the park and up to Monroe Road, there's potential for huge economic impact there with a future downtown. It will happen down by the hospital organically. It won't happen by downtown unless we spend some time and effort there. So those are the two things that we can do in the next 12 to 24 months, and others might have ideas as well.
Okay. I just wanted to know, based on your experience, you know, it's, for me, it's a little hard to put 50 years into what do we do today kind of mentality.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of curious.
Yeah. And I just wanted to frame that because some of the balance in the presentation that we all saw tonight, that Chris did a great job presenting. And some of that, it was kids not coming back to live in Stiling. Now, obviously that's a generalization because Stiling's is a bedroom community of Charlotte. I mean, literally people will always come to Stiling's to work in Charlotte. But some of those bad outcomes, perhaps increasing taxes and not having services or sewer infrastructure, road infrastructure failing. Those are the 50-year problems if we don't have a tax base to support them, even though we don't pay for sewer, as we'll talk about in the next agenda item.
Okay.
If I may also, you know, it's foundational pieces. So you're putting in those foundation blocks, just think of it like that, and it will start to build momentum. So, you know, it won't take long to start seeing some things happen.
All right,
Mayor, I have a couple of questions.
Yes, ma'am.
Chris, I think this is probably directed to you because I know you've done this locally here for a long time as well. Are there particular businesses or types of business that you see as being really suitable for Stiling's with regard to our location and the amenities that we have to offer as a town? That's my first question. And the second question is, we've been getting a lot of requests for apartment complexes, and I consider that residential development. I'm curious how you, from an economic development standpoint, view apartments, whether it's more commercial or residential.
It's definitely residential because of the cost to serve, but it's different in the sense, and I'm going to the apartment component, because you do densify your investment, and the cost to serve is there, whatever is happening there versus like an R40, you know, one a house per acre zoning, to serve that with a police force or with a fire department or whatever, extends them pretty far. If it's densified, it helps. So not that you want to densify everything, but you want to find pockets where you can do that. And there may be some opportunities to better use that finite land. You know, it may not build better or build as well for a commercial, but it might be a good apartment complex. So it's not, you know, there's never an easy general answer, right? So everything's kind of site specific. And so you'd want to look at them each individual site and each individual project. So they but the you're creating a lot of value per acre in an apartment complex versus one home per acre. The type of businesses really is going to be more in the professional side, things that are more intellectual property focused, things that would go out on a bread truck or an Amazon truck versus something out on a 53-foot trailer. But I would see, you know, with COVID, we'll see how this is evolving with office development, but there's a lot of office space in Uptown Charlotte now that's coming available because people just don't want to go work in a tall building. And you know, how is that going to push out to sort of these mid and low rise office buildings? So are we looking at 2 to 5 story, just potentially something like that, particularly around the hospital might be a good target for that, where you can get professional services. So again, we can go through that and we'll give you a bigger list. But I think, you know, anything is software development, professional services, high end, you know, sort of medical device, anything that's going to be smaller, but high value, would probably be some good, just off the top of my head, examples.
All right. Thanks, Linda. Thanks, Chris. Anybody else?
Just adding to what he just said for Linda's, I mean, do you have like a portfolio, if you will, Chris, that you're able to go and try to attract those type of businesses? Or is there ways of luring those type of businesses?
It depends. You know, again, a lot of this is changing too. And in a traditional manufacturing sense, it's a little bit easier because you're going to bigger trade shows. You're going and finding these companies in certain areas that they've clustered, like California or New York or Chicago, where they're trying to leave. When you're looking at something like this, a lot of it will come through the brokerage community as well as through Department of Commerce. And so there's some specific strategies that we can do, and there's some specific things that we can do to make people aware. It's a lot of it is just awareness of what we want and what the town is willing to move, you know, sort of heaven and earth for. And if they're willing to do that, it's going to attract. And so there's a lot of that stuff that we'll put out and become more aware, just awareness of what we've got, what we want to be, and then actively go out and try to then recruit that. So there's not anything that's sort of like, oh, let me just pull out of this bucket of projects that I've got. It doesn't typically work like that. So we're constantly in a mode of looking and trying to make people aware of the different things that, and where we have a competitive advantage. And so that's where Stallings brings a whole nother, you know, it brings something that we don't have in other parts of the county. So that's, you know, one of the advantages when we're selling Stallings, we're not, really not selling against anyone locally. It's really against maybe a Belmont or someone else, a Fort Mill type of thing.
Chris, question for you. So when I look at Stallings and see a lot of potential, but one of the things I see that is holding us back a little bit is somewhat non-traditional, and we really don't have access to a good fiber network here. And from what I've seen in other communities that have developed or kind of encouraged that type of connectivity, is that you've seen an explosion of small shops open up. I know downtown Kansas City did that with Google Fiber, and Dallas is going through that right now. But with the town of Stallings, it seems like we're limited to subpar I won't mention their names, but internet service that is continually a source of frustration for our residents. Do you think there'd be some value in reaching out to some of these companies that offer that and seeing what they would look for to invest in a community like Stallings?
Yeah, I mean, you're closer than pretty much everybody else to like Google Fiber in Charlotte. And so you would be more inclined to get it than others. In the first wave that it spills out. Mm-hmm. But yes, I mean, Rowan County has done some of that. Fayetteville just finished something with that. Broadband's a big topic for us right now, particularly because of the remote learning, the remote work. It is high on everybody's list. It's one of the top legislative priorities for the state association. for economic development, and we're tying in with other folks to help with that too. So it is a that topic is almost every association or every group focused on development. That's when they're top three right now. So we should see some big changes with that. You know, who knows what Elon Musk is doing with the satellites, and that can change pretty quick. Everything. So I know the first ones, I guess he just shot one off yesterday, just putting some satellites up around the North Pole. So he's starting that network. So we'll see how that starts to go. So putting in like hard fiber lines is one strategy, but I think we need to be open to what's happening. There's so much moving in that space right now.
Sure.
But yes, it is. It is a very, very high priority for all of us, for sure. Because again, without that, you're not. We want to target international companies too. That's what we, one of the things I'm very proud of. And so if they're moving engineering files back and forth between Denmark and Stallings, that's got to happen. You can't wait for dial up. So I hope that answers. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, my comment, the two words I liked, or three couple of words I heard, the highest and best value, I always like that. Whether it's in economic development or any other application. So, I think as we go about looking at projects in town, that we always keep that in mind, that, as part of Chris's economic development strategy is to make sure it's the highest and best value use of that piece of property.
The one thing I would say, because you are in such a good place and because you have such a good sort of underpinning, is don't settle.
Well, that's good advice. Good timing on that advice there, Chris. It's always good.
and that does bring up some questions on Chris. Do you have some kind of a checkpoint on what might be considered settling?
It's just when you start in every decision, sort of think about not just the one. If it's a residential project, don't think about it just as that. Think about how it ties into the whole quilt that you're putting together. And so that's really it. I mean, because again, you're going to need something that's more affordable. It can't be Hilton Head Island either, and so you've got to have that balance even within the residential base, but, really thinking about it. But just throwing up a strip mall for a strip mall case, that may, think about how that plays into the whole, what your vision is, again, to that 2050.
All righty, any other questions for Chris? And this presentation, is this something, is this just for our information? Is this something you're gonna use when we go out and talk to businesses, or what do you think?
I think Brad, we've talked about within the committee, we'll have a piece, a very small, easily digestible piece to present.
Okay.
This is really for your information to understand what's behind. There's a lot more behind what will be a small piece. So I think, Brad, is that?
Yeah, I think that's fine. I think the goal for the numbers and sort of the 84-16 and all of that and the cost of housing, that's not probably for public consumption. It's probably too detailed, but it does. We'd like to be armed with that information as we put together a front and back type strategy that's 4 or 5 points that's workable. And I think that comes to you probably in late February.
Well, as we're talking about economic development, and which we know Highway 74, the bypass around the hospital will grow, like you said, Chris, will grow organically. And I think Lynn's on the call here. Have we got any inquiries from businesses lately? What's an update on that to your office, Chris, and to you, Lynn?
While they're unmuting themselves, I saw recently that there was a retail establishment being proposed up on my end of town near the Chestnut Solis Apartments. So that's a nice thing to see. That's not necessarily what you're asking, but it's related.
I think the corner right there on 74 just got a big old for sale sign placed on it. So it's the opposite corner from the hospital.
Okay.
So do we have any inquiries? That's what I was just curious if, where do we stand from that? You know, any hotels, restaurants?
I mean, from our office, everything is extremely slow. We've been focusing more on the existing industry side. I think people will, our activity will start to pick up after people have settled in with the new administration at the federal level. And then there's a new commerce secretary at our state level. So there's some changes both, you know, federally and statewide that I think people are just, you know, they don't want to make a decision quite until they know all the information. So that should probably start to manifest in February.
All right, Chris. Well, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you so much for letting me be a part of this and look forward to working very closely with all of you.
All right. Thank you very much. All right, next we'll move on to the Union County draft of the interlocal agreement, and I'll turn the meeting over to Alex.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you to Chris and Brett and everyone for their hard work on the ED work team. Excited about that project. Can y'all see my screen with the rippling water there?
Got it.
Great.
Yep.
All right. So real quickly, so you all know Union County, they are the primary water and sewer utility provider for Stallings. And in October, town officials, both staff and elected officials at various points, met with county officials, discuss ongoing water sewer issues and just kind of build relationships. And at that time, the county officials indicated that they wanted to enter into some sort of interlocal agreement on water sewer with the various municipalities within the county. We didn't know what the substance of what that was until late December when they provided a draft of that agreement. Of course, we shared that with the board. Staff have evaluated it, you know, posed a bunch of questions to the county, and work with our neighbors in that evaluation. I want to especially express my gratitude to the county staff, as well as the town of Indian Trail staff, as well as our staff. I think we've got some excellent working relationships there. With that be said, the agreement, without trying to summarize or pretend to try to summarize everything, here are some of the key takeaways that are in there, the key highlights. The first is the county under this proposed agreement would be our exclusive water sewer utility provider. So that would mean if the city of Charlotte, if sewer capacity wasn't available in a certain area of town and we wanted Charlotte to come in and provide that capacity where Union County wouldn't be able to do that. It restates some existing county policies, indicates a desire to work together as far as information sharing, that kind of thing, towards the county's capital improvement and park and water sewer master plan. This is probably one of the biggest ones. We would agree to be responsible for any package plant if the developer or subsequent owner ceases to provide sound maintenance. What a package plant is it's essentially a smaller wastewater treatment plant that serves a smaller area. So you'll see that in a lot of times where perhaps there's not sewer capacity for a particular area that developers will go and try to set up a package plant to treat the wastewater for a particular site. And those still have to get permitted through the state. And the term is for 30 years, but really any party can get out of it within 2 years now. So staff, after hearing feedback from the board members that we've talked to about this and have reached out, talking with our neighbors, talking with the county, you know, we could talk about this and really get into the legal nitty gritty, but I try to be concise and focus on some key takeaways for some suggestions about what the town's draft position could be. First of all, the agreement is not equitable on all sides. The town will be making a number of significant commitments, and I do not see much incentive for the town to enter into such an agreement. The second is committing to take care of any sort of sewer plan in town. That'd be a huge and significant cost assumption and really risk assumption for the town. And not only would it be a cost standpoint, you know, we don't have the infrastructure from a staff capacity to be able to manage those kind of operational wastewater treatment facilities. And finally, of course, we would be willing to kind of work with the county, project our needs as part of the county's capital improvement plan. That goes without saying, we want to be a good partner and information sharer for them. We want to keep the dialogue open, even when we don't agree on everything, and work cooperatively with Union County, the town of Indian Trail, and other municipalities. When I say work cooperatively, it doesn't mean we sing kumbaya behind the fire. It means we listen, we keep the communication channels open, and we try to work together for everybody's benefit. So those are some really brief suggestions, trying to break this down into a simple form. And if the council concurs, you know, we could draft a communication incorporating the above and send it on to Union County. So with that being said, I tried to go over a lot of information very briefly there. We welcome any questions or concerns, or are happy to sit back and watch the discussion. So thank you all.
All right, Alex, thank you for the work on this and getting feedback from the council and incorporating it into your presentation there. So, you know, I agree with your analysis there, and I'm fine with y'all drafting a response and bringing it back to us using those bullet points that you showed. So anybody else?
Yeah, I agree with that as well. I think one thing I thought about, and it was slipping my mind earlier when we had our subcommittee meeting, Brad and Heather, we need to add a caveat, and going forward, we need to add a condition to all of our developments that they tie into Union County water sewer, so we can avoid facing any of these issues.
Yep, agree.
Martin, I shall mention Mac and I have had that conversation as well, and that's something I think we can do, and I'll let him expand on that more in depth.
All right, anybody else?
I certainly agree, Mayor, and I'll make the motion to direct staff to develop a communication to the county incorporating the bullet points that he has outlined for us tonight.
All right, motion by Ms. Paxton. Can I get a second?
Second.
Who was that?
John.
John, okay. Second by Mr. Martin. Any other further discussion? Aaron, could you do a roll call, please?
Yes, sir. District 1, Martin.
Aye.
District 3, Paxton.
Aye.
District 4, Groom.
Aye.
District 5, Ayers.
Aye.
District 6, Richardson.
Aye.
All right, that's unanimous. All right, thank y'all. All right, next up is our closed session. Can I get a motion from somebody to enter into, is it 143, 318, 11, A and 3 and 5? Is it 143, Aaron?
Yes, sir, 143, 318, 11, A 3 and 11, A 5.
All right.
If the council would like for Ms. Hare to join us for the one session, please just make that a part of the motion so that she can also join us in that closed session.
All right. Alex, you want to say something?
Aaron beat me to it. Thank you, Aaron.
No. All right. Can I get somebody to make that motion?
Just motion to have her join us.
Is that it? And to go in this closed session pursuant to 143, 318, 11A, 3, and 11A, 5.
So move.
So move. There we go. That's easy enough. With Aaron.
Second.
With Lynn coming, being invited in. So motion by Ms. Paxton, second by Mr. Richardson. Richardson, yeah, I got you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No. All right. So everybody.
So what we'll do is we'll log off of this meeting, and then I will open the other closed session link that you received in your email today.
Okay.
Thanks all.